This is the second in a series of three lectures. We're going to be talking about usability testing. Last time what we talked about was some of the basics of usability testing, why we would go about doing it, and some of the metrics that we're interested in when we're actually doing usability testing. Today I'm going to be talking about a couple of, three different methods for actually doing the usability tests, and also answering some basic questions about the sort of mechanics of actually running these usability tests. Next slide. So at the end of this lecture, you should be able to know how to select users for a usability test and how many, and certainly at least the questions that you should be asking yourself when you're trying to answer these two questions. I'll be talking about a couple different ways of analyzing data, and also three different usability test protocols and the pros and cons of these protocols. Next slide. So one of the central questions that you are going to encounter when you are constructing your usability test, particularly out there in the field, is asking how many users you're going to have and who and what kinds of users you should actually be bringing in. The answer to these two questions, as usual in this class, is it depends. It's a pragmatic thing. And essentially, it depends on your needs, and the answer to the who question depends on your needs, and it depends on who you have access to in terms of practical time, right? Are the expected users that you have, are you going to be able to find them? Is their time too expensive? And if so, are you able to find reasonable proxies to use your system? There are some situations where it doesn't make sense to actually get real users in the situation that they're going to be using the system. So, for example, this is pretty extreme, obviously, but perhaps some kind of breathing apparatus. So we're talking not computers necessarily, but some sort of breathing apparatus intended, let's say, for deep-sea divers, right? We don't need to necessarily test those people in that situation, right? We can test deep-sea divers, but perhaps not in that situation. Your ideal situation is you get the people that will be using it, and if you can't, then you find people that represent those people that use it. And these people that represent the people that use it, hopefully they understand the ins and outs of being people that actually use, that are going to be using your system. The answer to how many is, there's considerable debate in the community. So the typical rule of thumb is to use about 5 different users. So if you hit the next slide, I'll explain kind of how this works out. So the basic idea here, and this is kind of the only equation that you'll ever see in this class, is that each person is only going to help you discover a certain number of usability problems, right? A certain proportion of these things. And as you increase that number of users, sort of your return on your investment kind of goes down. It's quite high up until about 5 users or so, and then the shape of this equation is such that you're getting very little return on your investment. So typically, L, which is the proportion of problems discovered by one user, is considered to be 31%. And so if you actually plot what this chart looks like, you'll actually see that you kind of taper off at something like 80 or 90% of most of the problems anyway by the time you have 5. And the reason why you would use this is, and the way you understand, the way you should understand kind of what's happening in this slide, is that if you had 15 people at your disposal, let's pretend, right, that it's better to actually use, you know, to partition this group of 15 into groups of 5, right? Into 3 groups of 5, and use these 5 people to test different iterations of your interface rather than throwing them all at the same interface, right? Because you can use them, you know, to discover problems in later interfaces. The idea, of course, is that you are iterating on the design. Okay? So I think in practical terms, another way of thinking about this is, suppose you're designing an interface, a website login to the website of, you know, some forum or something like this. You have a login screen, and if your first 3 users can't get past the login screen, then it doesn't make any sense to use the next 12 to go through and see whether you encounter the same problem, right? What you would do if you encounter that problem multiple times early on, you just fix it. Now you have a new, you know, you have a new iteration on your interface, and you can, your people can actually get past that problem, and you can actually discover where other bugs exist, right? Most usability tests are there to help you find sort of what are going to be really obvious problems. Okay, and those are the problems that you really want to get rid of as soon as you can. Next slide. So when you're trying to make sense of your data, you're going to have a whole bunch of it. Some of it is just going to smack you right in the face. Like, people aren't able to log into the system, or people don't know what their username is, or people don't know what their password is. Or when you press tab, when you're moving from the username to the password, it doesn't work, right? These are kind of big, obvious problems. You also want to look for error trends, where multiple people kind of are committing the same kinds of errors. Or, you know, when you're asking people about their experiences with the system, if they're telling you the same thing over and over again, this is a trend in comments. So these are really big things that you want to be looking for. When you have these issues articulated, what you want to be able to do is to group them in terms of severity or priority. And the simplest way to do this is to group them into three different categories. The first categories are of bugs that you just simply have to fix. It's a brick wall. If you ship this thing without this bug fixed, you have a piece of crap on your hands, right? The second category of things are things that you should fix probably, but it's okay to wait. And then the final thing is sort of third priority. This bug is okay as it is, right? But it could be improved perhaps in another iteration in the future, right? Next slide. There will be contexts where you have so much data that you don't know what to do with it, right? And here is an instance where you can use affinity diagrams again. You can actually set up these findings as a bunch of sticky notes, just as you would have if you were doing the requirements analysis. And then you can actually go ahead and group these things together, and that helps you to discover usability bugs as well. Next slide. Another technique that is quite common is essentially to have conversations with people who have watched the usability test with you. They're going to have a slightly different perspective on what happened, or they're going to have a slightly different understanding of what they thought happened. And going through this process helps you to articulate what these different bugs are. Other people may have a better way of articulating what that problem is. So this is a very common technique to actually analyze data. So rather than doing it in isolation, do it as a group. Next slide. So as I already mentioned, one of the things you want to do is provide feedback. So, you know, you've already kind of figured out what these bugs are. You've already kind of figured out what the priority is. And based on these kinds of things, you want to also perhaps provide some suggestions. So particularly for bugs where you think that you've run into a brick wall, like this is a brick wall kind of a bug. You want to actually have some solutions about how to address that, right? And depending on where you are in the design cycle, you want to kind of tailor your scope, right? So if you're at a very late part of your design cycle where people are ready to ship, basically, you probably don't want to be, you know, providing design suggestions to sort of re-architect the entire system or the information flow for the entire system. Instead, what you want to be looking there for are things that really are going to cause big problems, and hopefully there are small fixes for it. One way of really convincing people to actually go ahead and make these changes and include these changes in the last few cycles before the thing ships is to include videos of users actually encountering problems with the interface that you're talking about. So obviously you want to iterate on the design as well. I've also included here a link to a final report that you can see. And this is just a quick sample. Next slide. Okay, so what I've done now is I've talked about a bunch of the simpler issues that need to be dealt with. They're sort of practical issues that you need to think about. None of them are particularly hard, but you know, now you have some rationale for explaining the choices that you're making. So what I want to do now is I want to talk about three different usability test protocols. And these are sort of basic ones. There are sort of more advanced ones. There are also situations where you kind of mix different protocols together. Now, protocols is a kind of a set of steps to follow when you're actually conducting these usability tests. So there are three that I want to cover here: Think Aloud Protocol, Co-Discovery Protocol, and Conceptual Model Extraction. You can mix and match these things as appropriate too, of course. Next slide. So the Think Aloud protocol is quite simple. It's kind of, You know, what you're seeing is what you're getting. The basic idea is that when you're having your participants complete the task, you simply ask them to explain what they're doing the whole way through. You prompt them sometimes, hey, what are you thinking right now? What are you looking at? Why are you clicking on this thing? You know, what are you feeling as you're going to do this? Why are you doing that action right now? And the idea is that rather than go away and try to interpret what it is that they actually did, you're asking them to tell you what they're thinking all the way through, right? So what this means is that you can take away that layer of interpretation and really allow your users to speak on their own behalf rather than have you interpret for them. Next slide. The obvious problem with this is that sometimes it's a little bit weird. It's kind of strange because most people don't really talk while they're working. They're typically taught not to do that after about, you know, grade one type of thing. And they may also be embarrassed to say things out loud, you know, if they're not sure about what they're doing or they're not sure about what they're looking for, right? And so obviously in your testing environment, you want to make this as comfortable as possible. You want to make it so that it's non-judgmental. As we talked about last time, it is not the case that we are testing the users, and we want to make sure that they understand that right at the outset and as clearly as possible. Instead, we're testing the interface. So we really do want to find problems in the interface. For the most part, people are okay with this. Many people are not great with it. There's a small subset of people that are awesome at this kind of thing, where you really can get great insight into what they're thinking because they can actually think and do and talk at the same time. So because of this fundamental problem with the Think Aloud protocol, there's another protocol that we employ sometimes called the co-discovery learning protocol or the co-discovery learning method. And the main idea is here is to remove some of the awkwardness of a person who is sitting in a usability testing environment and basically talking to themselves as they're using an interface. So instead, what you do is you have two people sitting there. Both of these two, in principle, are probably test subjects. And what you do is you have one person actually manipulate the interface, but they're only allowed to do it if they have explained to the other person who's just sitting there what they're doing. And actually, the person that's supposed to be driving the interaction for the most part, kind of intellectually and verbally, is the person who is not at the computer interface, right? So you have two people. One person is sort of bossing the other one around, and the second person is actually moving the mouse and touching stuff on the keyboard. If the person that wants to move stuff, who's at the keyboard and mouse, wants to do something that the other person didn't ask for, they need to say what it is that they're going to do and explain why. And so what you end up getting is this really rich conversation of sort of both people's thought processes as they're navigating this interface. A slight variation to this is to use a sort of semi-knowledgeable coach and a novice. And in this case, your coach is not somebody that you're testing on, but they kind of know how the interface works. And what you would do is have the novice actually use the interface and ask questions of the expert as they do this, right? As they actually go through the interface. So this is the co-discovery learning protocol. This is a great way of essentially overcoming, again, the problem of that Think Aloud protocol and the awkwardness of it. All right, next slide. A protocol technique that doesn't kind of stand on its own but typically is used with the other ones is something called conceptual model extraction. So we talked last time about mental models and conceptual models. Well, here you're actually asking people for that conceptual model, and you're asking them, you're prompting them as they go about what's happening. So you show them the design, but don't necessarily actually say how it works. Then what you do is you ask your user to walk through each visual element of the interface and essentially ask them, what do they think it actually does? Or ask them how they think they would actually perform a particular task, what they would click, what sequence of events. You can ask this right at the beginning. You can ask it at the end. Sometimes you can ask it in the middle. If they seem a little bit stuck, you can ask them, you know, what they think the system is actually doing at this point. Right. Next slide. Right. So you can, like I said, you can use this as an initial initial extraction. So before they use it, you can ask them after they've used the interface to ask them kind of how they think the whole thing works. This is what we call a formative conceptual model. And what we would argue is that this is great for eliciting and understanding a user's understanding before and after the use of the system. But it's really bad for understanding how somebody's actually going to explore or how somebody's actually going to learn the interface. And in contrast, the strength of the Think Aloud and the conceptual Think Aloud and the co-discovery learning protocol is that we actually get to see them exploring the interface and learning how the interface works as they use it. So I've kind of covered now the three basic test protocols. And that's more or less it for this time. Thank you very much.